You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This week's episode is split into two sides. This is Side A.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Clock Radio Speakers. I'm your co-host, Armand Wake Up. You can follow me on Twitter at Armand Wake Up, A-R-M-O-N-D, Wake Up, all one word. More important than that, follow the official Clock Radio Speakers Twitter handle, which is at CRS Podcast. ClockRadioSpeakers.com is where you can get all of our previous episodes. We are also pretty much everywhere you get podcasts except for SoundCloud because they're trash. But subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, everywhere, man. We in the streets. The industry, we in the streets. And Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff. At CRS Podcast, Facebook.com/ClockRadioSpeakers. And Doc's here. What's up, man?
It's hot. Summer is definitely here. 100%.
Summer on Smash for sure.
Yeah. Life is good. Yeah, everything's good, man. Everybody, yeah, you can follow me on Twitter if you want, @Doc_beats. That's not a Z, but like Armand said, just follow CRS Podcast. That's all you need. Yep. But yeah, man, things are good.
Fantastic.
You know, it's we're recording this July 2nd. It is my wife's birthday, so we were out and about this weekend. I cooked some ridiculous ribs last night. Oh my goodness. Okay. I think I've talked about this before on the show. I have a sous vide machine, so you basically like vacuum seal food and then you like cook it in like a water bath at a particular temperature, and it like allows you to really like control exactly what you want. So like if you want medium rare steak, you dial it into the exact temperature and you could literally hold it there for hours and it'll just keep getting more and more tender. And then at the end, you either slap it on like a cast iron pan or on the grill just to like caramelize the outside. I had ribs in this thing for like 12 hours yesterday. Unbelievable.
So they pretty much fell off the bone.
They were great. They were fantastic.
That's fantastic. And yeah. Now I'm hungry.
Now you're hungry. So,
happy birthday to the first lady of Clock Radio Speakers.
Yes.
Man, streets is off. We got to get her back on the show sooner than later, man.
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to figure out the other day, actually. I was trying to think like what the right topic is. It might be another Defender 15. I don't know if we can live up to the Kanye Defender 15, but, you know.
Right, right. So, you know what? Let's just get into it.
We're not gonna jibber jab. We're not gonna.
Nah, I'm fine. You're fine. World is good. We all right. We gonna be all right.
Like, you want to talk about any of this NBA stuff?
No. Now listen. It's very interesting and it's great. And yeah, I mean, Dwight Howard got traded. That's no, I'm joking.
Who?
You know, Manny Pacquiao, whatever. Like, yeah, it's no. I want to talk Jay-Z.
You want to talk Jay-Z? Sean Corey Carter?
Yes.
Why are we talking Jay-Z? What's going on?
We need to talk about this album. Jay put out an album.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say I told you so, but Clockstradamus broke the news like 3 months ago that Jay was putting out an album. And here we are. 444 officially dropped a little early on Tidal.
Yeah.
Like 11:45.
As opposed to 12?
Yep, it's supposed to midnight. Yep.
Yeah.
Now, most new releases on Apple Music drop an hour early, right?
Yeah, they drop at 11.
Yeah, so, you know, they gave us a little, you know, we have to wait any longer. You know what I'm saying? 11:45. And, yeah, so new Jay-Z music. We have to talk about this album.
Yeah, we're going deep. So deep that I went back and listened to every Jay album since he came back from retirement.
Yeah, so I don't even know why you asked what album should I listen to.
I mean,
it was clear because, you know, this was supposed to be this.
So I can report back on what I on what
no,
I found.
Please. Let's get into it.
Kingdom Come is awful. I mean, it Jay, you know, oh man. So what I've always heard about that album is, you know, Def Jam needed something for fourth quarter 2006, and that album was rushed.
Okay.
Now, we've heard about artists, including Jay, recording albums in short periods of time. So it's not that sort of big of a deal. And honestly, if you transported that era into right now with streaming and everything, it would have been not even as big of a deal. But this is, you know, yeah, iTunes existed, but CD was king. So,
right.
You know, if you need something for fourth quarter, that means you're finished. You know, you only have so much time.
Right.
But no, that album is just, you know, it's all the things that Jay-Z detractors will say, right? You know, jumps on trends, can be corny at times, especially as he gets older. Like, it's all on display there. American Gangster, you know, we've talked about that album on numerous occasions. It is a fan favorite for good reason. It's amazing that, like, how much the heart of that album really is those new Hitman tracks.
Yeah.
And, you know, some records don't, like Party Life, that beat is great, but Jay is, it's not like even a C+ Jay-Z performance on that, but it's okay. The overall, like, aesthetic and feel of the album still holds up. So I was happy to see that, because I haven't listened to that album in a little bit.
Okay. It's still in semi-regular rotation for me, so, yeah.
Blueprint 3 was interesting.
Blueprint 3 is very interesting. That's the only album that I went back and listened to.
It's like two separate albums.
Yeah.
There's the, I want to say trend hopping, but really, like, there's the Kanye and No ID part of the album, which is like a string of tracks up front, plus some other ones scattered throughout. And then there's like there's the Swiss record, which actually really works. But then there's the Tempo records, none of which work. They didn't really work at the time, and they sound even worse now. And then there are a handful of the Kanye tracks that don't hold up, right? Like, Reminder, Hater, Forever Young. Like, that, the tail end of that is awful, but that opening run.
Hate might be one of the 10 worst Jay-Z records ever.
It's gotta be on the list, right?
Yeah, it's bad.
And then Magna Carta Holy Grail.
I listened to that too. I'm sorry. I said this on Twitter. I think the way that you feel about Kingdom Come is now how I feel about Magna Carta.
See, that's interesting, because I hated Magna Carta Holy Grail less listening to it now. It's a collection of mostly interesting beats, but Jay isn't all the way there, right? So in the late 90s, like, what he was doing with, like, Volume 2 and Volume 3 especially, he could do albums that weren't cohesive at all, but it worked, because the whole idea was, Jay, like, this is like the sound of, like, what's hot in New York hip hop in 98, 99, and Jay is at the peak of his powers.
And that was, we also have to recognize, that was peak hip hop, as we talked about in the Bad Boy Retro, where Big sort of instituted the girl song, club song, street song. So everybody was trying to emulate that, and Jay was
the best at it.
Yeah, he was doing that. Volume 3 is a peak example of that type of thematic theme, right, for an album.
Right, where there's not like, it's not like, oh, we're going for this sound. It's just, there's a whole bunch of stuff. Yep. You know, when Jay on Magna Carta Holy Grail tries to rap over what I would call the more modern beats, right? So F With Me, Know I Got It, Crown, and Beach Is Better. He just doesn't sound right. But there are records that go hard, right? Heaven goes hard, right? Somewhere in America, aside, if you just could, like, remove the piano, it would be, and the Miley lyric, it'd be about five times better. And Picasso Baby, aside from the fact that, like, my brain just can't, if I can separate the part of my brain that knows that it's just Timbo looping up an Adrian Young record, then I'm okay with that. But otherwise, it's just so weird. Like, Picasso Baby in Heaven, like, my mind has a hard time processing it, because I'm like, I know Timbaland, quote unquote, produced this, but he's just looping up records that make it sound like hard New York 90s records. Mm-hmm. There's like this, I'm too nerdy about hip hop to, like, actually really appreciate those, but I like Heaven. But it's not, you know, Jay might be the biggest problem on Magna Carta Holy Grail, right? He's not inspired on that album at all.
Yeah.
And I didn't go back and listen to Watch the Throne, because I've heard that 1,000 times. And that's really more of a Kanye record than it. I mean, in terms of, yep, like, how it sounds, how it's put together, than a Jay-Z record.
Yep. Yep.
But I'm glad I went back and listened to it. I also went back and listened to Life is Good. Somebody brought this up on Twitter, but I was already heading down that path. Right. Also, you know, a New York City legend from the 90s making a quote unquote mature grown up album, No ID heavily involved. There are some parallels. That album is a mess. It's way too long.
Yeah.
A bunch of stuff that ended up as bonus records should have been on. Like, I think we probably talked about this when we reviewed, yep, Life is Good. A 1.5 of that is dramatically better.
Yep.
A 1.5 of that would hold up amazingly well.
Yeah, agree.
But, you know, not album Nas struggles with all the things that Nas can struggle with, right? Like, let me make a club record, and it's like, oh God. And it just doesn't work for him, you know? It doesn't feel like honest Nas. So I'm glad I went back and listened to it, because all that to say, This is a really interesting Jay-Z project.
I want you to define interesting. Are we going to do that? Are we going to do that as we
try? I want to do that as we go along.
Okay.
Is there anything else you want to talk about before we start going into it? The rollout or, you know, some of the commercials that we saw, like there's a record Adness that is supposedly coming on the physical version, but.
Yeah, there's a couple of records. Young Guru tweeted that there are three. No, I don't, Young Guru said there was more, but I read somewhere that there are three.
I think No ID said three.
Okay. Yeah, on the Rolling Stone article.
Right.
So there's Adness. There's another record called Many Face God, and I don't know what the third record is.
Right. Yeah, Many Face God, that was also teased in a video.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So no, no, because everything you wanted to respond to, I forgot. Because everything I wanted to respond to, I forgot because you were just kind of rolling. So,
sorry.
No, you're good. Let's talk about the album.
Okay. Wow. We're like 10 minutes in and we're already going track by track here. Track one, Kill Jay-Z, obviously produced by No ID. How do you feel about this song?
I like it. There's a theme here where the production isn't necessarily mind-blowing, but it's good enough to let Jay do what he wants to do, what he wants to accomplish on this album. And I think Kill Jay-Z sort of sets that or establishes that. Lyrically, I mean, spoiler alert, to me, this is a Sean Carter album.
What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is if you listen to this album, if you listen to this song, he's pretty much saying you have gotten here and you kind of don't want to be Jay-Z anymore. And if we go back and look at the history of Jay-Z, you can make the case and shout some. And let me credit my man, Dre Murray. I had a really interesting conversation with him the other day where he broke a lot of this down for me. Jay never really wanted to be Jay-Z. Jay wanted to retire after Reasonable Doubt. He wanted to do one album. Listen to There's Been a Murder, back to Sean Carter the Hustler, Jay-Z is Dead. That's volume three. Like, and then, you know, God forbid the Black Album, of course. Like, Jay's been trying to get out of this for so long, but he always tells you he's a hustler. So when a hustler finds a hustle, you work that hustle. And it's weird. Jay-Z, and you know, this is a reoccurring thing that we'll address on this project. Jay-Z, the idol, the lack of a better term, the God, the all these things that he's created, he has an internal conflict now with Sean Carter, the man. And so it's like, all right, you're here, but look at all the stuff that you had that you did getting here. In order to get any further, like, I can't take this any further. This is now, for lack of a better term, dead weight. So I have to kill this persona in order to move forward with the album. So lyrically, addressing a lot of stuff. I mean, just clearly saying, yo, you stabbed Un.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, never admitting to it aside from the sorry Lance, I'm just trying to advance my quotes. I ain't making you the butt of my jokes. That's talking about it. But he straight up says, you stabbed Lance Un Rivera over what you believe to be leaking volume three, to let Cameron tell it, it's over Charlie Baltimore. But, you know, that already sets the tone. Like, okay, you are admitting your fault in that situation. You're admitting your fault financially, and we'll get into that in a second. What your persona has done to the lives of many, as we call them on Clock Radio Speakers, youths, and the, you know, talking about the salon stuff. Like, he's laying it all out. It feels like if this is the last chance I get to say what I need to say, this is what I'm going to say. And in order for me to say what I really want to say, I can't say it through the lens of Jay-Z. I have to kill him first. And so I love what it does. It's a super dope record lyrically. The beat is cool. The beat's all right. It gets a little jittery, which we'll talk about some of No ID's chops. But yeah, it's cool. It sets off as a good intro. It made me start thinking about Jay-Z intros. And I think we may have talked about this on CRS. Like, A Dream is his worst intro, right?
No.
You've got Can't Knock the Hustle.
No, the worst intro is probably Kingdom Come.
No, not even close.
I'd rather listen to Holy Grail than that.
Oh, no, Holy Grail's his worst intro. Never mind.
If you remove Justin Timberlake, I realize that's a crazy thing. If you remove Justin Timberlake from that record, it's not as bad as you remember.
It's a bad record. That's a bad song.
Nah, there are worse songs on that album.
It's two J's.
Can I throw some water on that whole thing that you just said?
Sure.
So I think Jay-Z, like the whole notion of like Jay-Z wanting to retire and keep coming back in, I think you could look at Jay's life where he thinks he's done enough with hip hop, where now he can leverage that and go to this new thing and have enough money and be comfortable. But every time he gets to like that next level, he realizes at some point he always has to go back and do another Jay album, right? Like he left in 2003 because he's like, look, we've got the clothing, we've got the label. Like, I don't need all this. He goes on, he's like, I'm good. Like I'm set. As far as he was concerned, that was the top, you know? And then he becomes president of Def Jam. He's got to put an album out in 2006. I think this album is out because Tidal needs help. Tidal is a sinking ship. They've got less than 1 million paying subscribers. They're in awful shape. Like there's a reason why Sprint is this exclusive partner, which, by the way, was a total disaster of an idea for anybody who wasn't subscribed to Tidal. You know about this, right? Did you hear about this? Like if you weren't subscribed to Tidal by April 26th,
yeah,
you could see that there was a new Jay-Z album out, download the app from the App Store, you could go ahead and pay whatever App Store you're getting it from. And then you could try to listen. It's like, sorry, can't listen to the song because it's an exclusive to Sprint or people who did this earlier. Like he must have got a lot of money from Sprint to do that. But that's terrible. Like there's a theme of like Jay will get so far and then he realizes, man, I need another album so I can come back out and do this other thing. Right. Tidal is in way bigger trouble than he ever lets on. But that's me. In terms of the rapping and the writing, I think that this album is a Rorschach test for how people hear and evaluate hip hop. I really do. Like, I see how people are responding to how Jay's rapping on this. And all I want to say is, and that this is unbelievable for me to say about Jay-Z, these things are better read as lyrics than they are the way that they are rapped by Jay-Z. And I cannot believe I'm saying that, but that is the state of Jay-Z in 2017. The washedness of Jay-Z is happening asynchronously. His ability to rap and flow is falling off harder than his ability to write. And it's fascinating to watch because you can clearly tell what type of hip hop fans value flow and which ones value the narrative and which ones value beats and which ones value how it reads or like the actual lyrics or the double entendres or internal rhyme schemes or things like that. But his flow on this is not really great. And if you're telling me a Jay-Z intro has a mediocre flow, that just sounds unbelievable as an old school Jay-Z fan, but that's where we're at.
Yeah. There's certain records. No, there's a couple records on this album, and I said Doc is going to kill his flow.
The beat on this is pretty good. Like the point you made about No ID, I think is really accurate, and I think that also is like a test for how you feel about beats in hip hop. Right? This is why I think we're tuning our own here. This is why I think Clock Radio Speakers works. Right? You are a rapper. You are approaching this from a rapper's point of view. Like for you, the beat exists to get you motivated and to drive you so that you can write something dope.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here listening to these beats and I'm like, yeah, most of these beats are pretty good. Nothing here is maybe one exception, is a knockout, right? It's a very Nas-like approach to beat selection. Jay has never shied away from beats that will be incredible or crazy. That's a hallmark of his career.
Right.
And so, I think this is an example of like, I think this beat is pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, so
we might be coming at this a little differently. Yeah. What did you think about the Ye stuff on here?
I'm curious to know if this is Jay talking to his little brother or if this is Jay disowning Kanye. Like, I mean, you give somebody $20 million, and they go back and they talk about you. And I'm sure there's way more to this story than we'll ever know.
Yeah, I mean, did you see, you see somebody tweeted this and TMZ reported today that Kanye is suing Jay-Z and Tidal.
Yep. $3 million, right?
Yeah, because he made Life of Pablo an exclusive. They didn't pay up.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting.
Not surprised.
Right. What can you say?
I mean, the irony here, right, is that like the guy who says, I'm not a businessman, I'm a businessman, can't separate money from personal. Like he took it personally that, and if you go back and read or even listen to what Ye ranted about on stage, it was because, of course, Ye can never separate business from personal. And it was more that Ye was like, why can't Jay return my calls? Like, it was just Ye ranting and raving. And considering that he went into the hospital afterwards, I think we can all sit there and go, I don't think Ye was in the right state of mind. But Jay clearly took that personally. He thought that if I give Kanye $20 million, he's going to shut his mouth. What kind of friendship is that?
Or, I mean, not necessarily if I gave him $20 million, he'd shut his mouth. If I gave him $20 million, if he has a problem with me, maybe he'll try to call me instead of try to put it on blast. Because I think this was after Kim got robbed in Paris, right?
Yeah.
I think that was the last straw. So, you know, you make a good point that nobody has talked about. Kanye went to the hospital after that. So he was obviously under some mental distress, for lack of a better term.
Right. Like, and for Jay to kind of hold that against him. I mean, yeah, hold the man accountable, or whatever. But like, if they're really friends, like, that seems weird to me.
I mean, but that's also Jay-Z. So this isn't the first time he's done it. This isn't the first time somebody has done something to him. He hasn't said anything. And then months, or even in Beanie Siegel's case, years after the issue, he brings it up. Right. So much so you forget that there was an issue. You know that they're beefing, but like, you forgot what was said. I forgot about the Kanye rant on Jay.
Yeah, we all did.
Yeah, I forgot. So for an album that has references to things that happened a week ago, you know.
Right, because he finished that song less than a week ago.
I mean, the what record was that?
With the Sharpton line?
Yeah. Was that Bam? No, that wasn't Bam. What was that?
I forget what record it is.
Whatever. We'll figure it out. Somebody's screaming at us right now.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. All right. So, I mean, it is what it is. Like,
all that to say, I don't mind Kill Jay-Z.
Yeah, it's dope. It's dope. It's not like crazy, but it's dope.
I think it's a good opener. I'm not mad at it. Let's talk about Story of OJ.
Yes.
This is a dope beat.
This beat is crazy.
Great chop. Great sample.
Yep.
Jay on this.
Uh-oh.
There's parts where he's barely rapping.
That happens a few times on the album.
It does. It's like he run out of steam?
It's kind of spoken wordy. Because remember that record he put out, Spiritual?
Oh, yeah.
And he was like rapping really offbeat, and it was like noticeable and awkward and bad.
Yeah.
When he's offbeat on this album, it doesn't bother me in cases like the Story of OJ.
It really bothers me. This is almost like a whole new kind of Jay-Z, right? This is the guy who would rap about stuff that was of the content was of no consequence, but the flows were always intricate and on point, and he was always, there was energy, and there, he would sort of dip in and out of the beat at his peak. And we're getting a flip, right? We're getting, you know, Jay is, this is right out of the Rick Ross Buy Back the Block playbook, right? This, you know, a chunk of this song and chunks of this album, this notion of, you know, enlightened capitalism, if you want to call it that, which I have a lot of issues with, which I'm going to talk about at some point. But Jay is trying to say something, and he's just like, what is even that flow when he's talking about the building in Dumbo? I'm like, what is this? I thought it was just, I was not a fan. And it's a shame because it's a dope beat, but
nah, it's one of those records.
There's some cringeworthy lines on here too.
Where?
The whole thing about Dumbo is, I mean, it's dumb. I can't believe he left in that line about, you ever wonder why Jewish people own all the property in America? Like, really? You're going to leave that line in here? Man, that's a nasty, that's a little bit of a stereotype. Like, there's a whole thing about, anyway. I don't know. And then just like conceptually, I mean, I see people reacting to this and the message of this. And I'm like, I mean, what I hear this is like the message of like, and this happens on Caught Their Eyes. And there's some other places on here too, where it's this notion of like, you know, the idea is essentially like, you know, it's for what he calls like financial freedom, right? It's this idea of like, you know, put money back in the neighborhood or buy this or buy that. And it's like, Jay thinks capitalism will save him, right? He just thinks that like, if he does it better, it's going to save him. So it's like, but it's still the same thing. I don't know. I have real problems with the message of the song, with his performance in the song. I think the beat is really good. And I thought the video was really well done. Did you watch the video?
Yeah, video was dope.
I thought the video was really well done. His performance on this is, oof. The writing's not bad, but the rapping is not great.
This record is crazy. Lyrically,
Can you please, just real quick, when you say lyrically, you mean
Like, you are very focused on, you feel like you, it feels like of all the records to criticize Jay about his flow on,
yeah,
this isn't the one to do it. There's one in particular where his flow was like, yeah, nah, this doesn't do it for me. As somebody who partakes in spoken word, I get what he's doing. It doesn't bother me at all. It's where, like, you don't necessarily have to. I think if you are, here we go. So I think if you are slightly behind on the beat, or if you create if you allow the flow to be a completely different instrument on top of the beat versus allowing the beat to dictate your flow, I think that's fine. When I don't like flow when it feels like you are waiting on an instrument, a snare, something to hit because you've already said the word and you're waiting to finish the line. That's what is cringy to me. He does that quite a bit on this album, but The Story of OJ isn't one of those records. And I think that, again, okay, so let's get into this. People are talking about grown man rap and mature rap and et cetera, et cetera. So I see a lot of 30 and over Twitter up in arms because you know, I'm really tired of hip hop empowering media outlets that are not hip hop and have clearly said they're not hip hop, make statements about hip hop, and then we validate them by giving them attention. Like, there's so much that just doesn't bother me, or that I don't have an opinion on because I don't partake. I just don't listen to it. I don't read it. Like, it's stupid. So why would I pay attention to something that I know is going to piss me off, that I know is going to make me feel a certain way? I don't have time. So I think it was The Root wrote an article that said that Jay-Z, or that 444 was the first grown, was like the first grown hip hop album. I saw Big Doe say something about Little Brother. I see some Detroit rappers say some stuff. Like, I've seen a couple of cats like make some passive aggressive side eye comments or whatever. Here's the difference. It's not that Jay is the first. It's who is saying these things about, I pissed away a lot of money when I should have been investing, and oh, I found this hustle about art and I bought something for $1 million and now it's worth $8 million a couple years later and I can give this to my children. For Mr. Misogyny, and we'll get into that in a second, Mr. Excess, to say these things, it hits home for a lot more people. One, because a lot of us grew up or watched Jay grow, essentially. So we remember Reasonable Doubt all the way up until here. We saw we saw Big Pimpin' Spendin' Cheese. We saw Is That Your Chick? And then we saw just the excess that Jay would essentially, you know, we talked about this on past episodes dealing with religion and hip hop, where people will say that, okay, well, this is preachy or this isn't preachy. And I made the argument that every rapper preaches about something and they make you feel bad that you are not able to partake in what they are preaching about. Jay-Z is a prime partaker of that sort of thing, where I'm going to name drop this watch, or I'm going to name drop this car that you can't afford, but it's the hottest thing on the streets and it makes me cooler than you because I have it. So for this, that guy,
he's still doing that on this album, on this very song. The only difference is now he thinks he's at another level because he's still buying art that you can't afford and he's holding on to it. But now, because it's for his kids, it's okay. It's still flexing about stuff that you can't afford. What's the difference?
I think it's different because it doesn't make me feel like I can't partake in it because there are things that I can invest in at my certain level. Oh, okay. So instead of, because he says that I bought every V12, you know, I wish I didn't. So, you know, for somebody like me who has a lot of sneakers, maybe I don't need to buy every sneaker that comes out. And I'm saying that in the context of, it didn't take Jay-Z to say, like, oh, y'all want to be grown up now because Jay-Z said it. Like, that's not it. It's the uncle who had a life and he settled down and he's able to tell you some things and you believe him maybe more than your father, more than your teachers, more than your pastor, because you actually watched him live what he's talking about. And now he's saying those things that I propped up, it's not that I bought them. It's why I bought them. You know what I'm saying? So it's the fact that I bought them just to piss them away. The fact that they lost value. You need to, you know, I mean, he says the part about, and you talked about it, the part about owning, you know, don't get killed over, a neighborhood that your mother's renting in. I know many people who feel like their block is their block. We're fans of The Wire. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's right. The mentality that is hearing this album and is saying, well, whoa, wait a minute. This is different. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, of course. Jay, like, what's a $200 pair of sneakers to Jay? Yeah, he's buying $1 million art. But, you know, for somebody maybe who's not in that financial range, it's like, well, maybe I should consider something else. Because to keep it real, Jay has a lot of sons in hip hop. I've noticed that. Like, people listen to Jay differently than they do a lot of rappers. They definitely look at him as a father figure.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I mean, I think maybe that's where this sort of doesn't work for me, because I'm like, I don't look at Jay-Z in that way.
Right. And I was going to say, like, I don't know if that's good or bad or not. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you kind of want your father to do a little more than rap to you once a year. You know what I'm saying? So, like, but that's the reality of it, is that Jay is a father figure to a lot of people. So for him saying things about invest in your community, think about your children, and leave a generational wealth, which he talks about in detail on another track. That I think that's what spoke to it. So you're right. He does. Yeah, we're not going to buy $1 million art, but it's not, you know, new watch alert, Hublot. You know what I'm saying? Right. So,
well, one of the interesting things, because I saw this on, I've got Genius open as we're going through this. So this is from the No ID interview. So, because Jay was sending, you know, Jay picked some of these samples, and No ID is instinctively like, we can't use all these Nina Simones. You know, he says, we can't use two Nina Simones. We can't use Stevie Wonder. And then he says, I left it up to him to do the rest of the business. It freed me up to just be creative. And so this is something really interesting, right? When the whole point of your album is to spur, people to subscribe to Tidal, all of a sudden the economics. Oh, and by the way, Sprint is probably going to pay such an upfront fee for that exclusive that the album's going to make money no matter what. Right. Mm-hmm. So now it's not necessarily, let's make decisions. Oh, we don't want to clear that sample. Doesn't really matter.
Doesn't matter.
When Sprint money is washing things away. And it's not that dissimilar from what he could have done on Magna Carta Holy Grail with the Samsung money. Right. Although in that case, it was specifically tied to, like, quote unquote sales. But now when you're in the streaming game, like, it's a whole different thing. He doesn't want Sprint to pay for 1 million copies. He wants Sprint to, you know, give him a chunk of money so that he can try to get more people to subscribe to his music service.
Yeah. I think, you know, because we talk, there was the point about No ID and his role, and, you know, like, what it said to me is what art can be or what music can be with an endless budget, because No ID did the last Common album and that wasn't good at all. So it's interesting. I don't want to give No ID as much credit, though. That Rolling Stone article is fantastic. It's a really good read. I don't want to say No ID is just this genius who pulled all these things out of Jay and put all these pieces together. He did his role. He did his job, but, like, having things like that make a difference.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So I just want to insert that into, so that people can kind of consider that for future projects.
I mean, the only thing is, No ID's been involved on many Kanye projects, and it's not like Kanye's ever cared about what he wants to pay to get an album done.
Right.
Very true. Wow. We're only on track two.
We're on track two. This is why we didn't need to talk about NBA.
We just started at the Fireworks Factory.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about Smile. Okay. This is one of the records that is co-credited to No ID and Jay-Z, because Jay sent No ID the sample. How do you feel about this song?
It's a grower. I didn't like it the first few times I heard it. The beat is kind of clunky. I'm not crazy about the chop of the Stevie Wonder vocals. They take a while. The bass line kind of is weird. It's kind of like how I felt about Solange's Don't Touch My Hair, where, like, I wanted it to do something, and then because it didn't do what my ears felt like it should do. I have to unlearn what I wanted it to do to appreciate it for what it is. You know, again, lyrically, like it's dope. So I like that. The thing about these samples is that they're all intentional and they all speak to the song conceptually. And I love that. So I'm not crazy about this one. Like it's all right, but I don't hate it.
Yeah. I like the beat on this. I think maybe a little bit more than you do. I like the sample. It's, you know, it's notably a modern beat in terms of tempo, drums, mm-hmm. drum patterns, et cetera, which Jay historically has a, I'll charitably say, mixed record on. But the flow here is actually better. It's improved to me.
Yes.
I'm not mad at the flow in this at all. I don't like the hook in any way, shape, or form.
There's a couple of clunky hooks on this album.
Well, you know, a couple clunky hooks. I mean, to me, this song really relies heavily on like him being so honest about his mom.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot also that like, I mean, frankly, the sample really tries, like carries a lot, like depending on how you feel about the sample, I think really, you know, determines how you feel about this because like thematically he just sort of goes all over the place, especially like the third verse, you know, he, was something that was pretty like these first two verses are pretty compact and tight. Right. You know, a couple topics in each one, but there's some bigger things, right? But the third verse, he's just kind of going all over the place. You know, like he, I mean, whether he's talking about Blood Diamonds or Jimmy Iovine trying to buy a title or what, like there's all, it's just all over the place. But it, you know, some good lines, some good, like couplets of bars from Jay, but overall it's uneven and okay.
Yeah. To double back and go back to Kill Jay-Z for a second.
Yeah.
Your comment about flow and what I was talking about, just to give an example for sort of waiting on the beat to finish your line.
Yeah.
It's how he delivers the Eric Benet bars,
which are kind of clunky, but okay.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, he's like, never go Eric Benet. Like,
right.
He's like, it's like Fisher Price, my first studio. So that's what I'm talking about, just for backlog, just for reference. Like when I'm talking about my problems with his flow on this album, that's a pristine example. But there's one record in particular where his flow is just not for me.
You touched briefly on the misogyny, and there's actually misogyny built right into that Eric Benet whole part right there. Like, so maybe misogyny is the wrong word, but when we get to 444, we will. Actually, maybe it makes sense to, because it's in the context of 444, right? Where
yeah.
he's acknowledging his issues with, I'll be charitable and say issues with Beyonce. And like, it, in a sense, he's like, you know, the biggest crime that Eric Benet, like that he could have made, that Eric Benet made is by letting this really incredibly attractive woman get away.
Right.
As if that has anything to do with cheating. As it,
right.
Like, I mean... I hear that and I'm like, I don't know if Jay gets it yet.
I think he used Eric Benet just in the context of to make a point.
Okay.
Well, because
we'll
you're right.
We'll get to 444 in a bit.
Yeah. You're not wrong, but I think cuz you know, we could talk like we've talked about this at length, like maybe it was on the Marcus Graham episode, I don't remember, but we talked about like, look, if there is infidelity going on, that's still your decision if you step out. Even if your partner gives you every reason in the world, especially if you're married, you that still does not give you a right to, you know, engage in whatever, emotionally, sexually, whatever, to engage intimately with another person. But I think it's just the narrative of cheating is she did something wrong. Oh, it's twofold, right? Because it's like, well, she did something wrong, which led to Eric Benet cheating. Or how could you cheat on Halle Berry? She's so pretty.
Right.
Both of those theories are wrong.
Sure. Right. And in the context of what Jay talks about in 444, it's like, well, if Jay subconsciously identifies more with the second part of that, that's, I mean, we'll get there when we get to 444.
Yeah. That's probably going to be longer than the story of OJ. That record we're probably going to talk about. That'll probably be a whole side.
Let's talk about Caught Their Eyes, featuring Frank Ocean.
You go right ahead.
This song is a big old nope.
Big nope.
Big nope. I don't know what is going on with the song. This beat is a big nope. Frank doesn't sound right at all on this.
Nope.
That is, this type of song is not his aesthetic. I mean, I don't know whose aesthetic this type of song is.
I agree. I don't like this record at all. I mean, again, lyrically, like, it's cool, but I don't like the sample. The sample's really goofy.
The sample is super goofy. Not a fan. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm good.
Wow.
I'm
doing this. This is the best. Yeah. Just, and this is, I mean, as much as I might have critiqued the first three, like, they all had their moments and I can listen to all of them. Caught Their Eyes is, to me, the first notable misstep on the album.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I agree.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and skip that.
All right. That was easy.
Yeah, that one was easy.
444.
Let's do it.
The centerpiece of the album.
Yes.
So this sample is super dope.
Sample is crazy.
But let me say this. The sample's so crazy that this beat is probably like a B+, A- execution. It's like just 5% away.
What would you have done differently?
So, and actually, let me talk real quickly about, like, broadly, like, so No ID... let's just say there's not a whole lot of bass going on in parts of this album. And a lot of his drums are very subdued.
Yes.
And agreed. To me, this song almost needed, like, take this back to Blueprint days, like splashy cymbal, like just do what this beat calls you to do.
So you want Just Blaze on this?
Maybe not quite. Let me tell you, when I went back and listened to those Run of Jay albums, some of Just stuff in like the 06, 07, 08 range is pretty ridiculous. I don't need the left to right stereo pan of him doing tom rolls, but like, you know, a little bit bigger could have worked. But I like this beat a lot, works tremendously well. But the beat is just one part of this. The beat is important, right? It is. But let's talk about what Jay is talking about.
Okay.
Let's talk about this song might as well just be called I Apologize.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So how do you feel about just Jay apologizing in general? Like, does it feel sincere to you?
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard people say this is Song Cry Part 2. But if you listen to Song Cry, he's justifying his stance.
Sure.
You know, I was just effing them girls. I was going to get right back. You know, you don't get anything back like that. Like, why you do, you know what I'm saying? Like, he takes the posture of, yeah, it was wrong, but I mean, yeah, what are you going to do? Like, it's like that.
Right.
Jay just sounds defeated. Yeah. It sounds like I messed up really bad and I feel the weight of my consequences. And the more that I unpack it, the more I realize the ramifications of my mistakes.
So I played this for Marissa in the car. Cause she, you know, it was funny because Friday night we went out to dinner and, you know, early birthday dinner. And
you played this on her birthday dinner?
Yeah. Cause she had heard about it on like BuzzFeed or Snapchat or something. So she was like, oh yeah, I heard about that. So I was like, oh, let's listen to it.
That's really interesting. We probably didn't talk about women cause I played this album for a lot, well, not a lot of women, but quite a few women. And this is always the record that I started with because this is the record that women heard about.
Right. And she said that she didn't feel like he sounded sincere at all. There's no emotion in his voice, which you hear as like, yeah, he's broken. He's defeated. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's true. There's not a single, he's almost monotone on here.
Man, have you ever dealt with somebody and they just like, they had their hands in their pocket. It's like a teenager.
Yeah.
Like their hands in their pocket. They're looking down. You're like, well, why'd you do this? Well,
I mean, no. I totally get that. I think it's this whole, I mean, that actually speaks to this whole kind of ridiculous, but okay. Concept of, you know, when Jay started going quote unquote steady with Beyonce and they're, you know, he was 33 and she was more mature. Like this whole notion of like Jay-Z's 47 now and he's just finally quote unquote maturing.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, if that's the way it is, it's the way it is, but that feels kind of ridiculous.
I mean,
I know I'm not trying to judge. I'm not trying to judge anybody. But no, I just thought it was fascinating to hear, like to have my wife hear this and that's what she's listening for. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that like, I mean, I don't know. I think it would have been, maybe it would have been weird if he would have gone full Ghostface on this, you know, like just, you know, emoting all over the track. I don't know if that would have felt like Jay.
Yeah, like never be the same again emoting.
Or like, I can't go to sleep.
Like, I can't believe you. I apologize.
You missed that for Blue.
Of course, this is the song we crack jokes on. Of course it is. That's funny. Right, but I get that.
I get that too.
How do you want that to sound, man? Like, that's so...
I almost think that... she's not here. She can't speak for... Like, I almost wonder if, like, if I asked her again, like, was she looking for, like, the, like, R. Kelly, Aaron Hall, I'm begging on my knees?
Yeah, exactly. And again, I think this is why hearing Kill Jay-Z first is so important.
You have to have Kill Jay-Z before this song.
Yes, because you have to understand, he's like, yo, I've been messing up for a while. This is just the way that my mistakes are manifesting themselves in this space. And it's affected my family. And as somebody with a daughter, you know, it took me having a child to see the world through a woman's eyes. That's so true. It's so true for me. I can relate to that because until I had a daughter and even after having a daughter, very misogynistic, very selfish when it came to the way that I dealt with women, a lot of women. You know what I'm saying? So a woman having a daughter will make you say, oh, shoot, like my biggest fear is my daughter meeting me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm preparing her to deal with meeting boys, men who think or thought like I did when I was younger. You know what I'm saying? So I get it. This record hits me on several different levels. And just to hear how he owns the mistakes almost like he wears them. Like he's saying, like, I'll probably die with all this shame. And he kind of like blames himself for the stillborns. And
I mean, that's, you know, that is possible. I mean, if like, right. Cause if he's causing stress, like, that will do it.
Right. Right. But we also know that he may be talking about stillborns and miscarriages in general, because remember, baby had a stillborn, still I got to move on. Like, I think that this can't be life.
Yeah. I mean, so you talk about Song Cry, like the idea of Jay getting personal isn't new, right? Song Cry, This Can't Be Life, Soon You'll Understand. Like, Jay has done this, you know, You Must Love Me. Like, there, he has cracked open a little bit, but this is completely different because, and frankly, unlike any other song on this album, even though people try to sort of take the raw, like, nakedness of Jay on this and apply it elsewhere, because it's not quite the same elsewhere. Like, he goes to a particular place here.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. I mean, he is clearly distraught. I mean, and that's where, that's the name of the song comes from, because he records it at 4:44 in the morning.
On Beyonce's mic. That's crazy. I'm glad you brought up You Must Love Me, because I didn't nearly hear as much regret. Like, I shot my brother.
Right.
And you hear You Must Love Me. You Must Love Me. I don't want to say that it sounds insincere, but he's like, well, I mean, it feels like he's almost like, well, I mean, at least he didn't die. I didn't kill him. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, that may have been his thinking back then. Like, this is just different. Right. So
in terms of actual, like, music, I think Jay has some really dope lines on here. I think his delivery is okay. I don't love slow flow Jay-Z, and there's some slow flow Jay-Z going on here. I get it. I get it, because, like, it's not like he's going to dip into, like, 97 Jay dipping in and out of the pocket on a record like this. Like, I understand that that's actually part of what's happening here, is this is meant to be sort of a fairly plain flow, because he is he's sort of confessing his sins. I get that. So I'm not mad at that. I don't know if this is my favorite song on the album, but it's a really dope and really unique record, especially coming from Jay-Z.
It's definitely top three for me.
On the album?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say all time.
We're
going to talk about people's hot takes and immediate reactions to this when we get to the end of the album.
All right. All right. Well, we may stop doing this show. But let's continue.
Anything else you want to say about 444?
No, I just, I also think that it was good for him to respond in the way that he did. Like, it's really interesting how people deal with grief, right?
Right.
Artistically. You know, Beyonce turned it into a whole thing, a whole album. And I'm not going to lie, I don't remember much from Lemonade.
It's not really good.
Yeah, it's not a good, it's not, I don't remember it being that good. It's not nearly as good as a self-title. But again, like we are guys listening to a Beyoncé album that is mostly dealing with her husband cheating on her and how she is processing that as a woman. That album is not for us. It's just not. And we could say, well, we're fans of music. We're artists, or not we're artists. Well, we're fans of music. So, you know, we should be able, but I'm learning with, I mean, I'm not learning, but I think this album in particular is a prime example of speaking to a particular audience and letting that be what it is. So that album's not really, it's not really for me. The music is, so, but she's like low key making pop records off of like, this dude cheated on me. And that's kind of an accepted practice in R&B, right?
Sure.
But like, I messed up. I should be a man, and you know, I neglected my responsibilities as a man and the commitment that I made to my wife and under God, and you know, and now I'm living the ramifications of that. I mean, you risk that for Blue. That line alone, like, is, you know what I'm saying? So like,
even when Jay is being this, I mean, being this like nakedly emotional, he's still sort. I mean, a little bit of a humble brag in here, because it's like, I mean, sure, I cheated on Beyonce. But it was a menage a trois. I mean,
you took that as a humble brag?
It's Jay-Z.
He did enough for me to tell me that this isn't a Jay-Z album. So I'm not hearing.
I am not buying into the mystique, okay?
it's not mystique. Somebody who, like, I don't buy into most stuff that people do.
Right.
But, like, this doesn't, it just doesn't feel like mystique to me. Nothing on this album feels like mystique to me.
You know what actually really hurt, like, some of these songs to me is you sent me the picture. It was him. It was all the things he said on iHeartRadio, like describing these songs. The difference between how Jay describes his own songs and how the commenters on Genius describe songs is completely hilarious.
Listen, Genius is rapidly approaching YouTube world star comment levels of bad.
But Jay-Z is describing the song. He's just like, yeah, it is what it is. It's like, yep.
He's like, yeah, I had the song. I woke up at 4 in the morning and I wrote the song. And they're like, so the fours represent. Because if you look up 444.
Right.
So there, it was a movie called Last Day on Earth. And it's sort of saying that 444 is also alluding to Jay's last album. Like, if this was the last day on Earth, what would I say?
If I had 24 hours to live?
Yeah. What would you do? Who would you screw? So... yeah, so that's like, I'm not saying that that's a stretch, but people are really digging into this album. It's not as bad as Damn or what was the name of that J. Cole album?
For Your Eyes Only.
Yeah, oh my God. Oh my God. Can we at least appreciate the fact that Jay is like, though he is rapping in entendres, he is like laying stuff out plain enough for people to catch. As opposed to, I don't know what the, did you see the Element video?
Yeah.
What was that? Somebody explain to me what that means.
It's really deep, man. So,
yeah, this is, so.
It's not even that it's so fake deep. It's also just, I just don't find them actually well done. It's weird. Every part of the video that doesn't have Kendrick in it would be better if you just sliced out, like, just removed Kendrick performance. And, like, anything where he's on screen rapping looks so often weird. Like, yes. Just have it be a collage of those images, and it would have been much more powerful.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have fit that song.
Kendrick's only good video is...
All Right?
All Right. I think people are probably going to say Backseat Freestyle, but All Right, and then... what's the video that Vashti did off of Section 80? Not ADHD, Rigor Mortis. That video was okay. Yeah, nah, I'm good. Like, you are almost adding, and it's one of the many things I don't like about Damn, because I actually went back and listened to Damn yesterday. You are allowing the people trying to, like, interpret what they think you said to add life to an era where stuff gets released and forgotten about the same day. I think that's kind of cheap. And I think as artists, I think what bothers me is that we give them credit for being deep. It's like, no.
I think there's some of that going on with this album too. Because all, really? All you have to do is look at how Jay described, like, look at those iHeartRadio quotes. Look how Jay describes some of these and then go read what people, not even just on Rap Genius, what people online are saying about some of these songs. And it's like, okay, relax. Jay doesn't even take this stuff as seriously.
Yeah. And I think that is, that's almost like it's Jay taking advantage of the culture.
I mean, but we know Jay. Oh, Jay's really good for that.
He's the best.
Yeah, taking advantage of, you know, what's out there. It's like, well, let me just kind of leave that up to interpretation. But I hate that. I hate it. But it's worse because in this instance, it's not necessary. But like with Cole and Kendrick's recent projects, it's like, well, what are you talking about? I really don't know.
We hope you enjoyed Side A of this week's episode. Please check out Side B at clockradiospeakers.com.